ChatBiz number 6, 8th of November 2012. Today we have Dave Baker of Charting Success talking to Karen about how to recruit a sales team who will work for nothing. Wow. But to give you some news first, the Health and Safety Executive launched on November the 2nd a new package of guidance for the small business designed to bring together everything that a small business with low risk would need to manage their health and safety issues. And I think you'll find it quite useful. The PAYE real-time information scheme comes into effect next year. So if you're not aware of it, please look it up. Lloyds Banking Group has partnered with Get Mentoring to help support thousands of new and growing enterprises across the UK. The partnership is supporting Young Enterprise, who will receive a £5 donation for every business mentor that completes the fully funded training during the month of November. A new website, bizcrowd.com, sponsored by the RBS and NatWest, is starting at the end of November. This is a free service where UK businesses can post their needs for products and services, allowing them to connect with other relevant businesses and prospects. It might be worth a look. And now over to Karen and Dave.
Hello and welcome to chatbiz.org. Today I have with me David Baker, who runs Charting Success. He is somebody who will help anybody in business with regards to mentoring, coaching, and for us today he is going to say how to recruit a star sales team who will work for nothing. Dave, work for nothing.
I think the point here really is that as a business, as businesses, we rely on being able to sell things, otherwise we wouldn't be in business. And inevitably we need some form of sales force. Even if you're just a one-man business, then you become the salesman. But there are other aspects of your business that can act as a virtual sales force. You don't actually have to pay them a salary, they don't eat, but you can still regard them as a sales force. And if you look at them like that, then what is it that you would actually want as your ideal salesperson? What would be the characteristics, do you think, for your business for an ideal salesperson?
Well, somebody who, I've always gone along with the knowledge that unless somebody knows what the business is and what it does inside out, you know, especially that elevator chat, that sort of 30 seconds you've got to be able to say what the business does and people understand it, then I would expect anybody that worked for me to be able to tell, you know, we're a tree nursery, we're specialists in growing British native trees, and where we're located. And if a client then asked the question of a particular tree, I'd expect that person that works for me to be able to say yes, no, and some details about it.
But equally, I expect you would wish them to turn up to work on time and work reasonable hours for you.
We always hope. I've had experience of employing people, yes.
And I guess you'd also expect them to be reasonably smart looking. I mean, not necessarily in a suit and tie, but to reflect your business.
Keen and presentable.
So any salesperson should present the business how you would wish it to be presented. Yeah. So then think about some of the things that we use as effectively virtual salespeople for our businesses and try and look at those as potential employees. So for example, business cards, one of my old favourites. Most businesses have them. Mm. But do they actually do the job as an employee ought to? So for example, do they have the company name right on the card? Do they have the person's name right? I mean, you would expect your salesperson to have a name and be happy to give that name, wouldn't
yeah.
you?
Yeah.
Okay. Would you expect them to know the address of your business? It would be rather handy for people to find you, I guess.
Well, definitely, yes.
And the phone number?
Yeah, but I mean, that's common sense.
Well, you'd be surprised how many people actually leave out the phone number from their business cards.
Really?
Absolutely.
Okay.
You have a website, I expect, for your business?
Yeah.
Well, you'd expect your employee to know where that website was to tell people. Mm-hmm. How many people put it on their business cards?
Right. So I can see where you're coming from now, Dave. So what are you saying are the key elements that should be on a business card? Like, I can't believe people would leave off. A telephone number is vital. How else can people get to you?
Well, I think probably one of the most common things I see that people don't put on the business card is they'll put a business name on, but they won't put a person's name on. Now, there are often reasons for doing that. Some people will say, well, that means, you know, I have a turnover of staff, I can hand them all cards out, I don't have to have them separately printed. You're not talking about a lot of money to have those cards printed.
Not now, no.
And the reality of life is people do business with people, not with businesses.
That's true.
So if you personalise it, then someone who has that card knows when they phone that business or they go to that business that they'll ask to speak to Karen or to Simon. They're not just coming to Stackyard Nursery.
All right.
So a person's name, I think, is absolutely vital to put on there. Mm-hmm. One of the other bugbears that I have, and I have to say that this is a personal thing, but it really does annoy me. You expect your employee to be professional. You expect your business to be professional, and people who don't use professional email addresses on their card, I really, really hate it.
Yeah.
It costs less than a fiver a year to have a professional-looking email address.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you do it?
Yes, yeah, I can sympathise with you on that one. You know, it's when it's Jim Smith, 5236... at 72489 or something ridiculous. Or the other thing that gets me is exceptionally long emails addresses, and when you're typing them in you've got to be so careful. You know, I mean, some of the addresses are used to be, I think people are getting a little bit more switched on, you know.
Yes, I mean, I think one of the things I'm beginning to see on business cards, which is actually quite a good idea, is a QR code. It's like a three-dimensional barcode. That QR code could contain the actual web address of the business. It could contain all the details on the business card, including the telephone number, so that you could just scan it from a smartphone and call the business direct. But the reality of life, and I think the acid test for a business card, is if you are looking for a product or service and you happen to be walking down the road and in front of you lying on the ground is a business card, and you pick that card up and it just happens that that is from a business that supplies whatever it is that you're looking for, would you know it by looking at the card? And if you could work that out from looking at the card, could you contact the business easily? Because if you couldn't,
the card's not working,
it's failed, fire your employee. Go get another one.
An excellent way of looking at it. Yeah.
And I think you can look at other things about your business in the same way. So think again about your website. I mean, one of the things that you said at the beginning was that you would expect an employee to be able to have that 30-second or 60-second elevator pitch. Mm-hmm. What is it that your business does? Isn't that what the homepage on your website should be able to do?
Yeah.
Because it's generally regarded that when people look at your website, they will probably only stay on the home page for less than a minute, probably less than 20 seconds. So that's the time that you've got to be able to tell them what your business does and entice them to look a little bit further onto your website. Your website, in the same way as your business card, should be able to tell that person how to get hold of you. Funnily enough, I was looking for someone the other day. I knew they had a website. I went to the homepage and thought, all I need to find is the Contact Us button. There wasn't one on the homepage. I actually had to go through three pages of the website to find something that said Contact Us.
Good grief.
It failed.
Yeah, because you wanted to contact them, but anybody else wanted to contact that business. You know, after you've gone through one page, you can't find it. After the second page, you just give up.
Yes.
You would go and find somebody who's easier to contact.
Yes. So I think that what businesses should be doing is conducting a regular appraisal, whether it's annual or monthly or weekly, of all of their virtual sales force, of their business cards, of their website. Even in terms of people with retail premises, you know, the front of your building, your shop front, is an employee of the business? Does it reflect what the business does? Does it attract people? Does it actually bring them in to do business with you? Because if not, then it's failed and it should be fired.
Yeah, that is quite interesting. I like quite a lot of people. I watched the Mary Portis programme on television where she went to shops and sort of did that exact thing, you know, that premise of what do you see when you look at the shop. And I'd not thought about it up to a certain extent, but yeah, you know, some of them, especially if they're a food shop and the outside looks a bit run down and the paint's peeling and things, and you think, well, if they're not very clean on the outside, are they going to be very clean on the inside? So yeah, I can see that. I can understand that one. You know, I mean, that's why we have window dressers, people who, you know, professionally go and do all the big stores' windows to entice you inside. But lots of small businesses perhaps don't think of it the way you are describing it.
Well, another thing, for example, with a website, and if you compared it to an employee, with an employee, you are legally obliged to provide them with a job description which says what they do. How many people actually have a job description for their website? What is it that they want their website to do? Do they want it to sell their product? Do they want it to attract people to come to their site? So, for example, does your website attract people to come to Stackyard Nursery? Is that what it's supposed to do? Or is it supposed to sell plants online?
Well, no, attract them to come and see me here, yes.
So if that's the job description of the website, then look at it with a view to that job description and say, well, does it fulfil that job description? Again, there are an awful lot of people that come into this and say, oh, yes, I think I need a website. Great, I wouldn't disagree with that. But they don't take it to the next stage and say, well, what is it that the website is supposed to be doing for me? None of this stuff costs lots of money. It's all really straightforward stuff, but it can have a huge impact on someone's business. Yes. If you get it right and it works, you will get business. If you get it wrong, I'm not saying you won't get business, but you won't get as much as you could.
Yes, I can see that, yes. Yeah. I wonder how many people listening to this suddenly start thinking about their websites, you know.
As I say, these are really, really simple things, and I suppose the thing with websites, as with anything these days, is you don't get a lot of time to actually catch people. So if your website is wanting to get people to actually try and talk to you, for example, there are various ways that you can do that. I mean, yes, of course, you can put the phone number on there and they can pick the phone up. You could have a box on that says, please call me. Means they don't actually have to spend the money phoning you. You could have a live chat box on there. It's a relatively simple technology to actually add on to your website. It just means that when you are actually open in normal working hours, that you can actually be there and someone comes onto your site. And again, there are various ways of doing this. I was on a site the other day and I was just browsing through the site and a box suddenly popped up and said, hello, you've been here for a couple of minutes. Is there anything I can do to help you?
Yeah, I've been on a few like that, yes.
Now, you know, some people might find that off-putting, but others, there's a button that you can press that says, I just want to ask a question.
Yeah.
And again, I had an experience of that today. I just was looking at a site. I wanted to ask one simple question. Great. Press the button. Got an answer back immediately. I was happy.
Yeah. And would that encourage you to go back?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And that's what you're wanting. You're wanting that repeat, not that one-off. Because it takes sort of, you know, 80% of your time to accrue 20% of your business. Well, if you can turn it around the other way, 20% of your time for 80% of your business, then you actually get a life as well.
Yeah, added bonus, yes.
Yeah, not that many small businesses get that much. So we've looked at business cards, we've looked at websites, and the things you can do. What else can we do?
I think it's a lot of that is going to depend exactly on what the business is and what it does. And there are some obvious things. I mean, for example, people say to me, just going back to business cards, should I put my address on the business card? Well, again, it rather depends what sort of business that you're in. So I'm a business coach. I actually go out and I talk to my clients on site. So they don't need to know where I live. It's academic. I don't conduct business from where I live. I go to them. So I don't bother to put my address on the business card. Having said that, company law, so the Companies Act in the UK, defines that there are certain pieces of your business information that have to be supplied. So as a business coach, I'm VAT registered. I actually am part of a limited company. So that information has to be, by law, shown on my website. So there are certain pieces of information that do have to appear. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to appear on your business card, but it does have to appear on the website. So as I say, it rather depends what it is that your business is and how you conduct it as to the information that you need to put in various different places.
Yes, whereas I want people to come to my business, the Stackyard. So the address, there's a Google map, there's a sort of all the interaction that's on there, opening hours are on.
I was going to say, opening hours are sort of important, really, aren't they?
Yes, yes, and it's quite interesting that even though all the information is there, you still get the phone call, you know, or you get people saying, I came and you were closed. And you sort of say, oh, sorry, everything's on the website. And it's on the front page of the website. But people still miss it. So anybody who's got it hidden in sort of five pages down or don't include it, they're losing an opportunity.
Absolutely, yes. Mm. And I think that sort of opportunity also is quite important. I was visiting a potential client a few months ago and asked them about their customers, not dissimilar business to yours, and asked whether they kept a record of their customers. And they looked at me as if I'd come from another planet and said, well, why on earth would we bother? I said, well, it's far easier to sell to people that you've sold to before. If they come and bought something from you and you have their details, you could always tell them about special offers on similar products. They might come back and buy again. Or if you're offering a special promotion on something, you could tell them. But if you keep no record of your customers, then each time they visit you, they're a new customer. You can't actually communicate with them. You can't tell them the things that you're doing. I mean, you'd expect your salesman to know who it was that they were selling something to, wouldn't you?
Yes.
But the same with your virtual salesman. So it's not always it's not always easy to capture people's information from your website. But again, it's possible to do it depending on what it is that you do. So perhaps you could say, well, if you give us your name and your email address and allow us to put you on our mailing list, we will give you, whatever it happens to be, a 10% discount when you visit us next time. Make it worth their while giving you the information by giving them something.
Yes. Oh, that's a very good one. Yeah. I'm writing that down. We did go through a period of collecting the email addresses of... you know, it was there if people wanted to join up for the newsletter. But one of the things I will say that a lot of small business people do is they start the initiative, but they don't keep it up, purely and simply because of lack of time and the work that's required to do that. But I can certainly see where its value is.
I suppose that it's sort of leading us perhaps into another slightly different area, and again, it's one that I think is quite important for small businesses. There's a great temptation when you run a small business to do anything that occupies your time but not necessarily benefits the business. So if you happen to come in and see that there's a leaking tap in the washroom, the tendency is to say, well, I'll go and fix the leaking tap, and you might take half a day to do it because you're not trained as a plumber and it's not something you're very good at and you've got to go and get the washer in the first place. Could you have done something far better with that half a day and paid a handyman somewhere to come and fix the leaking tap? Mm-hmm. I'm sure the answer to that is actually yes. But similarly, for example, mine is just a one-man business. I don't do my own bookkeeping. I have a bookkeeper. My bookkeeper costs me less than £30 a month to do what little bookkeeping I need. But it keeps my accountancy bills right down, because the accountant looks at it and says, oh, you've had your bookkeeper do these, that's fine, I'll just put a tick in the box here, everything's okay. Rather than having to go over through everything in detail himself, at which he charges me an exorbitant rate.
Yes.
And I hope he's not listening to this, really.
But that's actually really good advice.
Well, I think if we come back to your original question, which I managed to avoid answering quite neatly, I thought, with regard to newsletters, I don't currently produce a newsletter, but I've helped clients to do so, not in terms of me doing it or them doing it, but actually knowing someone that does produce professional newsletters and getting them to produce their newsletter for them. So, yes, OK, it does cost money. I mean, off the top of my head, I think it usually works out about £100 to £150 per newsletter. But on the other hand, the individual that does that takes care of everything. He takes care of all the legal requirements, and there are quite a few with regard to you're not allowed to spam people, how are you going to keep their data, how are you going to maintain it. Mm-hmm. He can take care of all of that for you, and there are plenty of companies that are out there that will do things for you like that. So you don't have to spend that time yourself, and you can keep it up on a regular basis.
Mm. So now that, you know, we've sorted out our business cards and we've sorted out our website, what else was there that you felt that we could improve of our services, generally as small businesses to clients?
I think the thing that I tend to spend a lot of my time talking about with clients is the power of systems. Now, I don't mean really technical systems. I mean systems for doing things, which could be very simple paper systems. I had a client who spent an awful lot of time photocopying things for clients, reports, and I actually pointed out to her the amount of time she was spending doing this, and she said, well, she had to do it because there was confidential information enclosed in it. And I said, well, yes, I can accept that there is, but why don't you just print it with a laser printer? And she said, oh, well, some of these pages have to be cross-signed by the customers. And I looked at it and said, well, yes, I can see that as well, but actually in these multi-page booklets, there's only ever one page that's actually signed by the client. So if you only photocopied one page but printed the rest of them, I'd never thought of that. So we went out together and bought a double-sided colour laser printer, which costs very little these days, and she saved herself 4 hours a week. Now, she was billing her time at £90 an hour.
So that saved a huge amount of time.
Easily paid my fees.
And one of the big things I think lots of small businesses do and hope they get it right is advertising. Now, I have tried. I'm obviously Yellow Pages and Google. I have tried the local East Anglian newspapers. We've had double page spreads, etc. And we've also been on the local radio. And we deliberately asked clients who came in, are you new? And how did you find out about us? So we actually did a survey. And the amount of people who the local parish magazines for us, which I appreciate that a lot of areas don't have them, but sometimes you have a town or a sort of section of a town's local magazine, they are the best for us. But it is interesting, if you go into the parish magazines, your professional advert that you send to them, they may not be able to put into their magazine, so somebody will just open up your advert and copy, or they will type it out themselves. So I think one of the things I've discovered is, after somebody rang me and said, you do know that I got your telephone number off the website, and I said, oh yes, fine. I said, well, no, because the advert in one of your parish magazines, somebody had typed the telephone number wrong. So instead of inserting our advert that had been sent to them, which was correct, they had actually just typed the advert up themselves. which is quite interesting.
Well, I have to say I've never come across that one before, and yes, that's quite appalling, so I hope you didn't actually pay them, did you?
I got an extra 6 months for nothing.
Okay, good. I think, actually, it's a difficult question, advertising. There are an awful lot of people that respond to the classified ads salesman that comes round and says, you get a free line insertion, but for a very small extra amount, I can give you this wonderful-looking box ad, and I've already prepared this one for you. And the problem is that it's just so easy to say, oh, yeah, OK, sounds reasonable, I'll go for that, and then never look at it again. Well, we were talking earlier about a potential client that I went to see, and I had, before I went to see them, looked at their Yellow Pages advert, and 30% of it was just a welcome notice to the company. And I said, what's the point in that? It's not telling anyone anything. And that space could have been used to say to people, when you were open, which it didn't say. It could have been used to say you had a large car park, which it didn't say. It could have been used to say that you had a children's play area, which it didn't say. And by the way, did you happen to notice that at the bottom it had actually got the address wrong, which didn't really help in terms of an advert. But people don't look at things like that, and yet they spend actually significant amounts of money on it.
Oh yes.
I mean, I think I would go with what you were saying. Things like parish magazines, school magazines is another good one. They actually have quite a good shelf life, simply because the parents keep them, because it has useful information relating to the school in it, which means that your advert comes to the fore fairly regularly. And generally speaking, although I think people are beginning to get wise to it now, they are not so expensive to advertise in.
The parish ones have been successful for us.
I think they're very good value for money, and the shelf life is pretty good. If you advertise in a paper, the chances are that it's seen today and on the fire tomorrow.
Yes.
Most of the parish magazines have a life of at least a month.
Yeah, easy. Some people keep them a bit longer. So, in summarising, what would you say are the most critical points for the business card?
Well, I actually produced a handy 10-point business card checklist, which I'll email to you, and you can put it on the website if you like. Some of this sounds incredibly obvious, but I do an awful lot of networking, and I collect business cards, and you'd be surprised how many people cannot tick all of these boxes. So, from the top, is your company name on the card? Some people just put a logo. It's a little bit difficult to actually figure out what the company name is from a logo sometimes. I mean, there are some very well-known ones, but
they've been in business a lot longer than the average small business, though.
Indeed. Is there an individual's name on the card? Again, it's tempting, isn't it, with a small business to say, I'll just buy a whole batch of cards with the company name on. We're not too bothered about individuals. But the point here is people do business with people, not with businesses. So they want to know that if they're coming to Stackyard Nursery, who is it that I should be talking? Oh, it's Karen. Yeah, okay. But you've got to have the name on the card for them to know that. Is there a telephone number on the card? Well, you would think it was obvious, wouldn't you?
Well, yes.
Not necessarily, I'm afraid.
Right.
Again, back to the personal bit, is there a personal mobile number on the card? It doesn't have to be your private mobile. I mean, mobiles are cheap. SIM cards are very cheap. Have a SIM card or a phone just for business.
Yeah.
You don't have to answer it at 9 o'clock in the evening.
Yeah.
But the point about it is that it's giving a personal effect. People think, oh, I can go and talk to Karen.
Yeah.
Well, she might not be there. She might not answer the phone. But the sheer fact is that you've given them the opportunity to speak to you.
Yes.
Is there a professional email address on the card? I think we sort of covered that one. Is there a website address on the card? If you have a website,
put it on.
Put it on. Mm-hmm. Get people to look at it. Put more information on there. Put information that on your website that people might want to have, that's useful to them, that draws them back to your website, that makes them think of you. Mm. Because if they think of you, they're more likely to do business with you. Does it say what the company does? This is back to the example I gave of picking the card up in the street. You know, it might look pretty, it might be a beautifully embossed, beautifully printed card, but if it doesn't say what you or your business does, when it's a failed employee, fire them. Go and get another one. Does it use all the available space? Now, I don't necessarily mean you have to write in every available space. One of the things I found out fairly soon when I started doing this was that, yes, you can print on both sides of the card, and it doesn't cost twice as much to print on both sides. But you should leave some white space on the card, because, generally speaking, people will write on your cards. Now, in Japan, that's very impolite to do that, by the way, so don't write, if you have a Japanese visitor, for heaven's sake, don't write on their card. But in this country, it's quite usual for someone to write something on the card, an aide memoir, perhaps.
Yes,
so
I do.
They'll look at my card and they'll look at the blank space on there and say, oh yeah, it was the bloke with the beard, or in my case, it might have been, oh yeah, he was the guy from the Federation of Small Businesses as well, which is another one of the hats that I wear. So leave a little bit of space for them to write something on the card, because they always do. Is the card visually striking, and is it good quality? There are companies out there that will produce you business cards for nothing or next to nothing. Frankly, I would say they are worth nothing as well. You know, it's back to the quality of the employee. It really doesn't cost a lot of money to have a decent weight of card for your business card and to make it look professional. Some people are very good at designing things, and there are tools available on the internet for designing cards. Some people shouldn't do it. Again, it doesn't cost a lot of money to find a decent graphic designer that will do you a logo, a card design that looks professional. If you are running a professional business, you want it to look that way.
Yeah.
It really doesn't cost a lot of money to make that happen. And again, another one of my bete noirs, does the card fit in a standard business card holder? There are an awful lot of people that collect business cards. I do. I have standard size boxes that I keep them in. And it really, really annoys me when I can't put the card in the box, because it then just sits in a corner, falls off, goes into the waste paper basket, and I lose it. There is a standard size for a business card.
Yeah. And all printers will know that.
And all printers know it.
Yeah.
So keep it within reason to that standard size. A few millimetres here or there doesn't make a lot of difference. But don't go and make one that's twice the size, because it just doesn't work. So those are my tips, really, for the business card checklist. I'll send you the file with those on, and you can stick that on the website for anyone that's interested in seeing it.
It's so kind. Thank you.
And I have a similar one. So if you were looking at your website as if it were an employee, what are the questions that you would ask in an appraisal of that employee? I'll send you that one as well.
That's really kind, Dave. Thank you very much. And if somebody wants to contact you after they've heard what you've talked about today and wanted some mentoring, coaching or advice, how would they get in touch?
I have a website, and hopefully it meets all the criteria that I've said, otherwise I'm going to be awfully embarrassed. It is www.chartingsuccess.co.uk. But again, I'm sure you'll stick that on the website at some point.
We will do. We'll put those contact details up. And you mentioned that you have two hats. You have your business hat. And as a lot of listeners know, we are quite heavily involved with the Federation of Small Businesses. And you have quite a senior position with the FSB.
Well, I'm not sure I would say it was senior. I'm vice chairman for Suffolk. I tend to joke that it was the vice bit that got me into it, and it's been sadly disappointing, but there you go. I get involved with the Federation of Small Businesses because I have a passionate interest in small business and seeing it succeed. The Federation of Small Business does an awful lot of good work in promoting the interests of small business, and I like to be there at the sharp end finding out what's going on, because that way I can help my clients better. So it's, you know, not entirely altruistic. It helps me to help my clients, but I think the Federation of Small Business is great.
That's excellent. So do we. Thank you for that. Now, you've just said help your clients. What type of clients do you have?
Many and varied, I suppose. They do vary from very, very small one-man bands up to, I think, the largest business that I've coached has a turnover of about $1.5 million a year. From my point of view, I work with businesses that interest me, and that can be just about anything from a curtain maker who makes curtains for the Sultan of Brunei, through to a company that imports sports equipment, to a storage and distribution company. So there's nothing particularly, but, you know, I suppose what it means is that I can go into those businesses. I don't know in detail what their business necessarily does, but I know about business. I can go in and ask the stupid questions like, why do you do this in this way? And then they look at it and say, actually, I don't know why I do it that way. Mm. So it works generally right the way across it. There are an awful lot of things in common with businesses, but it means that I get to look at them, and I enjoy the businesses that I work with, the people that I work with, and that's probably one of the key things that makes it worthwhile doing for me, really.
Well, I can certainly say, on behalf of Chatbiz, thank you very much. The information that you've given has been very interesting. I can tell everybody I'm now going to go and check the website in particular. Thank you very much, David, for joining us.
A pleasure.